This is Maryland Morning on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. One of the dangerous sources of pollution in Maryland's waterways, the Baltimore Harbor, the Chesapeake Bay, and many of the rivers that run into them, are PCBs, an industrial chemical that was banned 30 years ago but is still embedded in bottom soils. Now there's news that a tiny one-celled microbe has the power to clean up tiny amounts of PCBs. The scientist who identified that microbe is Kevin Sowers, Ph.D., professor in the Center for Marine Biotechnology, part of the University of Maryland's Biotechnology Institute. Welcome to Maryland Morning.
Thank you.
And also with us is one of Maryland's pollution watchdogs, Richard Eskin, Ph.D., director of the Science Services Administration of the Maryland Department of Environment. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's start with some specifics. What are PCBs and why do we care about them?
PCBs are organic compounds that have been manufactured since the 1930s. They were extremely resistant to breakdown, so they were commonly used in high-temperature transformers, capacitors, and because they were stable, these liquids could be used essentially as cooling components of these items. They were also used in carbonless paper. They were used as flame retardants in paints, so they were prolific in the environment because of the quality of the product.
So they just don't go away?
That's it. They don't go away.
Dr. Eskin, where do we tend to find them in Maryland?
Mostly in urbanized and industrialized areas around Patapsco River Back Harbor, or Baltimore Harbor, Back River, Middle River. Those are some of the areas that are highest. Around C&D Canal, Delaware Bay has some significant PCB problems, so we get a little leakage through there. And in moderate levels around the Upper Bay. As well.
So it's in those urbanized areas more than in the rivers?
Yes. What tends to happen is that PCBs really don't like being in the water. They'd prefer to attach to sediments. MDE is particularly concerned about them because the PCBs are carcinogenic with long-term exposure and can also have developmental effects in humans for infants and developing children.
So they're dangerous.
There is a risk. Our major exposure is not from the water, it's not from the sediment, but it's from eating fish. Very low levels in the sediment in the water tend to build up through the food chain until you get to the higher level predators that we often eat as fish for food, and that's where you see the highest levels.
Now, Kevin Sowers, you have identified this microbe.
That's
that
correct.
Somehow cleans them up. How does that work?
Well, we identified this microbe back in 1998, and over the last few years, we've been able to purify it and isolate it in a pure culture. This organism essentially takes these commercial products and removes the chlorines from the product, and that makes the PCBs, in some cases, it creates less toxicity, but more importantly, it makes the compounds more vulnerable to further breakdown.
When you say remove the chlorines, it's the chlorine atoms.
Right. It's the chlorine atoms on these molecules that make them stable. And generally, the more chlorines, the more stable they are. So by sequentially removing these chlorines, which is what the organism does, it makes the compounds more vulnerable to breakdown. And this organism actually used in this process is actually using the PCBs to respire. Instead of oxygen, it uses the PCBs to respire.
So it doesn't exactly clean them in the sense that what's left is not a completely harmless compound?
That's correct. You have PCBs still present, but the form they're in at that point can actually be broken down.
This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast, here in the studio with Kevin Sowers, who's professor at the Center for Marine Biotechnology, which is part of the University of Maryland's Biotechnology Institute, and also with Richard Eskin, Ph.D., director of the Science Services Administration of the Maryland Department of Environment. We're talking about ways to clean PCBs out of Maryland's waters. Did these microbes exist before, or are they mutants?
It's very likely they existed before. They probably used compounds that were similar to PCBs, were similar enough in structure that they could use them. These would be natural compounds that occurred in the environment, of course, at much lower concentrations than we've been introducing PCBs. And it's very likely when we started introducing PCBs, the compounds were similar enough to these natural compounds that these organisms could utilize them.
But now you want to scale up, right? You would
That's correct.
A lot more of this microbe to be...
That's correct.
To be breathing with PCBs.
We know they're already out there. So we isolated the organisms trying to understand what the organism, how the organism carries out this process and to find ways to actually stimulate and increase the activity so that we can get a more rapid destruction of the PCBs in the environment.
Okay, this sounds scary to me, the idea of scaling these microbes up. Is there a risk of potential side effects?
Well, they're already there. We're not making recombinant organisms. We're not doing anything with their DNA. They exist naturally in the environment. If you take away the PCBs, they no longer have them to live on.
So, is that all they can use? Do we know
so that? So far, all we can find is that they use chlorinated compounds. They do it very poorly, but they do it well. Obviously, they survive. But if you take away the chlorinated compounds in the laboratory, we find they no longer grow.
Dr. Erskine, how does this strike you, this idea?
Wonderful. Dr. Sowers and I were talking before we started recording about the possibility of collaborating. Perhaps we have some areas that we're identifying where there are localized high levels of PCBs, and it would be wonderful if we could find a way to field test in the natural environment. He's already starting to test in the lab, but I'd love to work with him to test this in the field.
So this might be one way to clean up PCBs. What else can be done?
Well, the best thing to do is to keep them out of the environment in the first place. And that happens in part through the federal and state Superfund sites. If there's places that are leaking PCBs, we find them, we clean them up. Places where there's been previous contamination, we try to find them and clean them up. But once it's out there, it's very difficult and very expensive. There's an ongoing project in the Hudson River to clean up some major deposits of PCBs that they've been working on probably for 10 or 15 years, extremely expensive to deal with it. And there's always the concern, if you dredge them out, are you going to spread the problem further? That finding methods to overcome that. The other possibility is sequestration, like putting a cap, for example, on contaminated sediments. But you can't do that everywhere. Either the sediments won't allow it or you need to allow for navigation. So that limits your options. So to some extent, natural recovery combined with burial and some moderate amount of and preventing them getting in the environment in the first place. Of course, the source reduction is primary. That's what we want to do as much as possible. There's not that many ways to get it out. Part of the problem is, so you'll find relatively low concentrations, but very widely distributed. So because it concentrates up the food chain, even those low concentrations are somewhat problematic.
Who has to pay for whatever cleanup can be done?
Where we can identify a responsible party, they need to. Otherwise, we're working on finding ways through, you know, grants and regular funding to do the cleanups. The other thing that we do in the interim is the department has fish consumption advisories where we go out and we sample fish in various areas. And then on our website, there's a hot link to these advisories that say, well, this kind of fish in this area has relatively high concentrations. Don't eat more than one meal per month of that kind of fish.
And we will post a link to your site and that advisory on our website. I would have thought, since PCBs were banned 30 years ago, manufacture of them was banned, that there would not have been many new PCBs entering the environment.
Well, Kevin's point about their persistence is really key to understanding this, because they just don't go away. So we may be seeing PCBs that were released in New York 40 years ago. Because they don't degrade, they could gradually travel down. And so there's still some input coming in because they just don't degrade.
Yeah, this was the case up in the Hudson River, the PCB source there. Even after they identified the problem in the Hudson River and after the PCBs were using, were no longer being used, they discovered that there were still high levels in the Hudson. They went back to the source and found that it was still seeping out of the limestone where they'd just been accumulated over the years.
Oh, so it wasn't seeping out of some industrial storage.
No,
seeping out
closed.
Of a natural.
And
I
it
see.
Was there'd just been a buildup of PCBs had gotten into the bedrock, and it was just seeping constantly into the river long after they stopped using them.
Getting back to the microbe, Kevin Sowers, how long do you think it might take for PCBs to be cleaned up to a healthy level?
Well, we're in the laboratory stages right now. We've identified the organism, and the importance of this was, for years, people knew these organisms exist, but they couldn't identify them. There was quite a bit of work done in the Hudson River since the mid-80s where they were never able to identify them. And so hopefully within the next couple of years, we maybe can get to the field and try them.
So we're talking decades before there's significant cleanup?
Well, I think it'll be probably a combination of technologies. There'll still be dredging. There'll still be capping, sequestering. And I think this will probably be used in combination with those techniques. So it's probably going to be decades before we can clean them up. But at least we'll have the tools not just to cover them up or move them, but to actually make them go away. And that's the significance of it.
Now, I understand this microbe doesn't have a name yet. Do you have a suggestion for what it should be called?
Well, we're calling it Dihalobium chlorochlorosia.
That has quite a ring to it.
But in the laboratory, we just call it DF1.
Very, very snappy. Kevin Sowers, PhD, professor at the University of Maryland Center for Marine Biotechnology. Thanks so much for coming in.
You're quite welcome.
And Richard Eskin, PhD, director of the Science Services Administration at the Maryland Department of Environment. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
We've got external links on our website, wypr.org. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.